Welcome to McGuire on the Wire, where you'll discover top stories and strategies in specialty tax broken down by our experts. You'll also meet leaders from across the firm who will discuss McGuire Sponsel's approach to common challenges faced by our clients.
Hello, my name is Jerry Hamill, and I'm here with my partner, Kyle Riddle. And Kyle leads our research and development credit team. And today we're here to talk about IRC 174 amortization, the new requirement under TCJA, and hopefully to dispel some uncertainty and some confusion out in the industry and things that we've read over the course of the last month or so.
Yeah, Jerry, there seems to have been quite a bit of confusion about 174 and the amortization requirement and how it relates to IRC Section 41, the credit for increasing research activities. And I think maybe the best place to start is we just define what is IRC Section 174 and what does it entail, and also IRC Section 41 and what does that entail. IRC Section 174 has been around since the 50s, and that's an immediate deduction of R&D expenses. And what does that mean? It means expenses incurred with your business, R&D costs in the experimental or laboratory sense. To qualify for Section 41 for the credit, that those expenses must first be IRC Section 174 eligible, and then there are some additional tests that would need to be applied in order to qualify for that credit. So those two code sections have been very closely linked, and I think it's important to note that all IRC Section 41 expenses are also IRC Section 174 expenses.
So Kyle, if I could like dial that down, and it's really all 174 expenses are 174 expenses, but Section 41 is just a portion of a taxpayer's total 174 expenses.
Yep.
And the other thing too that I've heard out there is that, well, I only need to amortize the qualified expenses that are under the Section 41 credit calculation. And what you're saying here is no, there's a much more expansive definition and subset or I guess total set of the 174 expenses.
Yep, exactly. Most taxpayers who have a history of identifying those Section 41 expenses will likely have Section 174 expenses that are in excess of those 41 expenses. So maybe let's talk a little bit about how we got here.
Yeah.
And some of the legislative history of this amortization requirement under 174. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that went into effect January 1 of 2018 is when this whole idea of amortizing research expenses over a five-year period really started and didn't, though that law went into effect in 18, taxpayers weren't going to see an impact on that until tax years beginning after 12/31/2021. So here we are at the end of 2022, and this has become a reality. And,
Kyle, is that part of the confusion? You know, this delayed implementation or effective date? I think that and, you know, part of it also is I think most tax experts and most CPAs really thought this was going to be corrected before we arrived at the 2022 filing season, right?
Yep, we've made it all the way through the entire tax year 2022 with three different legislative fixes that were introduced during 2022. The fix to the 174 amortization was discussed as each one of those three pieces of tax legislation were being written. None of the three of them ended up including the 174 fix. So here we are at the beginning of 2023 and no choice but to face this amortization requirement mm-hmm. head on and develop a plan for what taxpayers need to do and how they're going to do it. But, you know, as you can see, this example with the pre and post TCJA, you have taxpayers pre TCJA that would get that immediate full deductibility and expensing of their qualified research expenses in the year in which those expenses were incurred. You get the expensing and the deduction. You can also get the credit on top of it. So there's quite a bit of benefit there pre-TCJA.
And this assumes the taking the reduced credit under 280C, correct?
Yep, correct. Yeah. So we're talking net effective benefit. Moving forward in tax years beginning after 12/31/2021, we have a situation where taxpayers are only getting a portion or a small part of that deduction for their qualified research expenses. And it's not even just a 1/5 of the deduction. It's actually due to the mid-year convention in year one. It's 1/10 of the deduction. So instead of, in this scenario, $1 million of qualified expenses, instead of that full $1 million or even 1/5 of it, at $200,000, you're only getting a $100,000 deduction.
In year one.
And that will snowball or waterfall each year, but you're still getting the credit. That doesn't change. That's one misconception with this 174 requirement. Is the Section 41 credit itself does not change. It's just how much of the 174 expenses can be deducted in that year.
Okay. The Section 41 credit remains the same regardless of whether the 174 expenses are currently deductible pre-TCJA or required to be amortized post-TCJA.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe some examples. I think that's been a lot of our clients and CPA firms that we work with have asked. They say, okay, well, what are 174 expenses and what does that mean? And how is that different than Section 41? And again, I think it's important to note that all 41 expenses are 174, but not all 174 are 41. So some of those 174 only expenses would be and direct or incidental R&D costs, and maybe the most obvious is when you have contract research for IRC Section 41, where you're only able to take 65% of that amount to include it in the credit. The 174 expense related to that would actually be 100% of the expense.
So it doesn't have that limitation like Section 41 requires.
Right. So any taxpayer that is claiming Section 41 and has contract research as an expense will automatically have a different 41 expense than a 174 expense because of that difference. So patent expenses, utilities, lab supplies, any kind of potentially administrative costs associated with a research and development department, those are all 174 expenses that would now need to be amortized and would not be included in the 41 credit calculation.
And then, so the million-dollar question, right, is, are we going to get a fix for 2022?
Yeah. I mean, here we are at the beginning of January, and every day that ticks by, it seems less and less likely that there will be a fix. And if there is a fix, will it come in time for taxpayers to make the adjustment or not for an on-time filing for their 2022 tax return? So it is still possible, though not likely. I think there are three scenarios. One is we get a fix here before taxpayers have to file for their 2022 returns. Two is there won't be a fix at all. And then three is we'll get a fix at some point in down the road, maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years, would create potentially confusing situation with partially amortized years, but would require some additional guidance, but it's certainly a possibility.
Which is part of the reason why we're here and providing some support and expertise for our CPA firm clients. Because, you know, while we're hoping there's a fix, here we are on January 9th. There hasn't been a fix. The Speaker of the House was just named a day ago. So at this point, it seems unlikely that it will be fixed. And so at this point, we're just doing all we can to pull together materials and information to assist firms in addressing this and how they're going to handle their tax returns for their clients this year.
Yeah. And as we, like I said, move forward day to day and a fix is becoming less and less likely, we're faced with the reality of, okay, what do taxpayers need to do? And how do they identify 174 expenses? And do they do it themselves? Do they lean on their trusted tax advisors? Do they hire a third party to help with that? This is definitely something that McGuire Sponsel is going to help with. It will at least make it an option for our clients to assist with, but it is important that taxpayers identify a methodology to approach that 174 requirement, and it's not an option at this point to forego that amortization. It's not something the taxpayers can just forget about.
Well, it's statutory change, or legislative change that impacts statutes. So it's something that must be addressed, and CPA firm advisors, tax advisors, need to consider and talk through with their clients in terms of how they're going to address this. One question that comes to mind for me is, I see our Section 41 projects and our work papers and how we approach that. And really that approach just comes down to identifying the 41 qualifying research expenditures that are 174 expenditures, but only those that qualify under the activities that meet the four-part test. So this seems more expansive to me.
Yep, definitely more expansive. And that's why I think it's important to take a close look at how the Internal Revenue Code defines Section 174 expenses, what expenses need to be included, and what methodology does the taxpayer need to employ to make sure that those expenses are identified and properly amortized. I think what does that service look like? I think it's defining 174 and what are the requirements. There's not really a lot of guidance out there on what Section 174 expenses are. And then how does that interplay with Section 41, and what does the amortization schedule look like, not just for your domestic research that falls under 174, but also your international research, and obviously two different scenarios with 5-year amortization required on 174 domestically and then 15 years for international.
Okay, to kind of boil this down, our normal Section 41 project won't identify all the Section 174 expenses. So this is an expanded amount of time and effort to identify those and work with the CPA firm to determine how they're going to classify these expenses, and then also what approach to amortizing these.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Well, I guess the next question is, anytime there's a legislative change or a code change, is this something that is going to require some type of special filing or something that CPAs are going to need to consider?
Yeah, just last week, the IRS came out with Revenue Procedure 2023-11, which replaced 2023-8, and provided some guidance on will this require a change in accounting method? Will a Form 3115 need to be filed? And that revenue procedure basically, and there's more detail to it than this, basically says no, this is not a change in accounting method that requires a Form 3115 to be filed.
Okay. Well, it seems at least the IRS has come out early to let taxpayers know that and to at least take some of the burden away, but it's still going to be more time and effort to arrive at taxable income for taxpayers and having to deal with Section 174, first identification, quantification, and then the amortization calculation. So at least we don't have to file 3115 this year.
Yep.
Very exactly. Good. Well, I think, if anybody has any questions, I can tell you that our R&D team has been working through this diligently to identify all of the requirements, really scope out some of the changes, and try to get this information out to our CPA firm clients. So we are more than happy to assist. Our team has the expertise and the experience to really expand this analysis and not just limit it to the 41 credit, but expand that into the Section 174 issue that's facing everybody today. So, Kyle, I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing this information, and looking forward to a change. But if it doesn't come, McGuire Sponsel's teams are here to assist.
Yep. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Kyle.
This has been McGuire on the Wire. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on social @McGuire Sponsel to get more industry news and firm updates.